Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted, and we'll hear arguments next in Pacific Gas and Electric against the Public Utilities Commission.
One of the great Supreme Court advocates said that some of the problem is the people seemingly to answer questions without.
This is Brennan's got this all figured out. He voted to dismiss.
Who did? Right. Brennan?
You know,
this is for one of the substantial federal
bills. No, I was right. I thought natural gas and that.
You what?
I thought in 1962 decision that natural gas and that.
You mean
that there was preemption?
Yeah, but why would you dismiss it then?
Because I think I would affirm.
Because
they say it is not Mr. Harris, I think you may proceed whenever you're ready now.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, this case comes from the State of California, which has ordered Pacific Gas and Electric Company to include in its monthly billing envelope the fund solicitation messages of a third party. We are required to include the message 4 times per year for a 2-year period. For the past 60 years, PG&E has used the billing envelope to communicate its message through the PG&E Progress. The envelope has never been opened to the public. The California Supreme Court refused to hear appellant's petition for a writ of review, thus upholding the Commission's decision. That decision was appealed to this Court, which noted probable jurisdiction. The issue presented on appeal is whether or not the State of California can, consistent with the First Amendment to the United States Constitution, compel Pacific Gas and Electric Company, a privately owned public utility, to include in its monthly billing envelope the fund solicitations of a third party, in this case, turn toward utility rate normalization. Utility speech is protected by the First Amendment. In Consolidated Edison, this Court decided in 1980 that the State of New York could not regulate the political speech that Consolidated Edison put in the bill and envelope unless the State showed a compelling state interest for that regulation. The right not to carry the message of others applies, indeed, to a corporation.
What case holds that?
First National Bank of Boston versus Bilotti, decided in 1978. In that case, this Court was faced with the issue as to whether or not a corporation was entitled to the protection of the First Amendment. As a matter of fact, that was the first time that the issue was squarely presented to this Court. And Justice Powell, writing for the Court, said that the inherent worth of speech is not determined by identity. He said that you look not to the identity of the person who is asserting the right. You look to see if the right that is being asserted is a right that is protected by the First Amendment.
But did that case hold that the kind of Woolley versus Maynard type of First Amendment rights, the right not to carry a message you don't agree with, applied to corporations?
That case was not faced with that issue.
So it didn't hold it?
It did not hold that a person had a right, that a corporation had a right not to carry somebody else's message.
So what case of ours do you rely on for that proposition?
There is no case that specifically holds that in the case of a corporation. However, we do rely heavily upon at least 2 cases. Miami Herald versus Tornillo and Woolley versus Maynard. In the Miami Herald case, the Court held that the State of Florida could not compel the Miami Herald to publish the reply messages of third parties. And in that decision, Chief Justice Berger, writing for the Court, indicated that although the State of Florida made good arguments in terms of why a wide variety of views are necessary or desirable, but the court says in each instance where there is an enforced right of access necessarily calls for some mechanism, either consensual or governmental.
Do you think there's a difference between a newspaper, which is not a regulated enterprise, and a public utility, which is quite strictly regulated, for a difference for these purposes?
For these purposes, I think that the same principle that applies in Torino should apply here. The mere fact of regulation, as this court indicated in Consolidated Edison, does not preclude a utility from asserting First Amendment rights. In Tornillo, the difference, of course, is that Tornillo involved a newspaper. Here, we're involved with a situation where you have a utility's building envelope. But the principle is the same. That is, as the court said in Tornillo, newspapers should not be compelled to publish that which reason tells them should not be published. Here, a utility should not be compelled to carry a message in the building envelope that reason tells it should not be carried.
Yes, but hasn't the court distinguished between different kinds of media? The Red Lion case, for example, involving the fairness doctrine, was dealing with a broadcast station, which is regulated in a sense, and yet the broadcasters are required to do certain things.
In the case of Red Lines, there, Red Lines did not rest upon the basis that the broadcasters had a monopoly. It rested rather upon the basis that they were using a scarce resource that was not open to the public. Here, the mail is not a scarce resource. And as the court reasoned in Red Line, and again emphasized in Consolidated Edison, is that a broadcaster can only communicate through those scarce resources.
Mr. Harris, do you concede that the Public Utilities Commission can require PG&E to carry in its billing envelopes notices of public rate hearings or things of that kind?
Justice O'Connor, we have indeed carried such notices. We will.
Well, I'm asking that. If you concede whether the Public Utilities Commission can properly, under the First Amendment, require the company to do that.
Yes, we do concede that.
Why is that different in your view?
That is different because in the case of a government notice, here, an informational notice informing utility customers that a hearing is going to be on such and such date, or that there is a public health or safety matter pending somewhere concerning the utility, is quite different from compelling PG&E to carry in its billing envelope the fundraising message of a third party, unregulated by the commission, a third party who is free
well,
to say.
Does this argument suggest, Mr. Harris, that the PUC order we have before us, you'd not object to if it ordered or permitted Tern to insert only factual matter that dealt with the public utility business?
No, it would not, Justice Brennan. We would object to it because
we said that was all
we would be forced to carry.
I asked you that question because I thought you answered Justice O'Connor that the PUC could require you to insert
it's
matter that dealt with rates and such. Did you?
As I understand, Justice O'Connor, it was whether or not we could be compelled to carry a state notice. As I understand your question, it's whether or not we can be compelled to carry a private person's notice.
That's right.
And no, we cannot, I don't think, consistent with the First Amendment, unless the state shows a compelling state interest for ordering us to do it. And we rely on Woolley versus Maynard.
Yeah.
And that is.
That's the death or die or whatever. The automobile license, wasn't it?
No, it's not the death or die.
I see.
We also rely on the general principles of the First Amendment, and that is compelling someone to speak when there are other ways available.
Are you going so far as to suggest that a corporation's negative First Amendment right, as you perceive it, is coextensive with the individual's?
Yes. I think that this Court intimated that to a certain extent in Hopper and Roe versus the Nation's Enterprise by Justice O'Connor, where she indicated and cited ruling that the right to speak also necessarily includes the right not to speak. And then she quotes New York's Chief Judge Fuld in terms of how they serve the same ultimate purpose. The purpose that being served here is the right not to be compelled to carry someone else's message.
And it's no different whether it's an individual or a corporation.
I don't think it's any different at all, whether it is an individual or a corporation, that you cannot look and say, in the one instance, this is a corporation, therefore you carry the message without regard to anything else. I think you have to look at the nature of the right involved. Is that right protected by the First Amendment? Here, the right involved is the right not to carry the message of someone else.
Is there any difference with the utility?
I think there is a difference. I don't think there is any difference whether it's a utility
example,
or any other corporation.
Could the state order the utility to publish the rate schedule?
Yes, indeed.
Well, then there is a difference.
Yes, there is a difference if it is the message of the state. If it is the message of a third party, then I would disagree.
Why doesn't it make a difference, as the court below held, that the extra space in the envelope doesn't belong to the utility?
It is true that the commission below held that the extra space does not belong to the individual.
Well, no, it doesn't belong to the utility. It
doesn't belong to the utility.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yes.
It doesn't matter, because what we are talking about is the regulation of what goes into the bill and envelope.
Well, I know, but it's the space, it doesn't belong to the utility, it belongs to the consumer, it was held below, right? And so the commission said that we're going to fill up that space that belongs to the consumer with periodically with something that we think the consumer would be more interested in.
It is true that that is what the commission held, but we argue that the First Amendment cannot depend upon a metaphysical definition of space.
How does the First Amendment give the utility the right to use that space?
What we're talking about, Justice White, in addition...
We are talking about who gets a free ride on that space.
If the question is who gets a free ride, the commission can certainly deal with that question by assessing an economic value to that extra space. But here, in order for the consumer group to use that space, they must use an envelope that the commission has not said belongs to the ratepayer. And in using that envelope, we are compelled to associate. We are compelled to be the courier of someone else's message. And we think that that is protected by the First Amendment.
Mr. Harris, a moment ago you referred to the Harper and Roe opinion and the suggestion that the right to speak and the right not to speak are somewhat similar. Do you think the right not to be a courier is equivalent to the right not to speak?
I think it's very, very close.
It's clearly not the same, is it?
They're not identical, no.
Does any consumer object to having the consumer's space in the envelope used in this manner?
We don't know, Your Honor. We haven't. That wasn't part of the record below, but I would suspect that many consumers will object, because there are many consumer groups.
The commission would have the power to prevent the utility from putting anything in the envelope except the bill.
I don't think so. I think that would clearly reverse Consolidated Edison.
Well, why? The space doesn't belong to the utility. But why should it get a ride out of it?
But the outcome of this case does not turn upon who owns the extra space.
But it does who owns the envelope.
Well, I don't think it necessarily turns upon who owns the envelope
either. That's the way you're being a courier.
The envelope is or has not been held to be the property of ratepayers. The envelope carries the name of PG&E. The envelope is a document, is material that we must send to the ratepayer. Whatever is in that envelope is associated with PG&E.
Of course, PG&E could change that very easily if it wanted to by saying PG and then adding turn to the envelope. I mean, if it disliked the notion that perhaps it was misleading people.
Then the association would become even worse, because there you have both PG&E and Turn being the sender of the bill. The purpose of the bill and envelope is to send a bill. Even aside from any other document included therein, it is the forced association, the forced compulsion to speak when we prefer not to speak, that is at issue here.
Well, don't you think there's some difference between the loyal, feisty citizen of New Hampshire who didn't believe in live free or die and therefore didn't want to carry it on his license plate, kind of an individual type of thing? It always struck me, though I must say I didn't agree with the result in that case. And the corporation, I don't see quite the same personality element there.
It's not the same personality, of course, but it's the right that's involved. The right not to be the carrier of someone else's message that I think is at stake here. In Woolley, live free or die. Here, we carry whatever the message may be that is given to us from Turn into a bill and envelope that we have mailed out for over 60 years. People associate what we mail in the PG&E envelope with PG&E.
Can't you, under the Commission's ruling, put a disclaimer on what you circulate saying this is not produced by PG&E or something like that?
The opportunity to put a disclaimer.
Turn
must put a disclaimer. But a disclaimer would not cure the violation. As I indicated, for over 60 years, this has been the PG&E envelope. The forced association causes the injury. The opportunity to disclaim an inaccurate or an inflammatory message will not suffice to undo whatever damage that may have been done by including the message. The state of California cites Pruneyard as its...
Would you kind of enlighten me a little more about the nature of this damage to the corporation? It's not pecuniary injury, is it?
No, it's...
It's kind of an insult, sort of like...
It's reputation.
Now, what did it? Does it adversely affect the reputation, or it's misleading, or what? How does it hurt the corporation?
It affects us in this way. Over the years, we have expended a lot of money building up the image of PG&E, building up our corporate image. To the extent...
Well, is part of your image that you don't like people who oppose rate increases?
No, Your Honor, we have not even carried the message of those who support rate increases. We have not carried the message of anyone other than PG&E, although we have been requested by numerous jurisdictions, including the city and county of San Francisco, to carry its message. But as you can probably see, once we become involved in that, then we find ourselves irretrievably entangled in a mess. This order requires that the PUC place itself in the position of selecting the speakers. In other words, who uses this envelope, whether it's Turn or some other person, must first come to the Commission. It must first indicate to the Commission the subject matter that it intends to talk about. Once it indicates that, then the person must indicate whether or not the viewpoint expressed is one that is in support of PG&E or opposed to PG&E, because, as the decision said, it is the purpose to get a variety of views in addition and opposed to those of PG&E. I think that government really will become so entangled, unlike in Pruneyard, in picking and choosing speakers,
that government will end up being the ultimate arbitrator of what is or what is not said. Who speaks?
In favor of public ownership of all utilities. Under this order, could that committee put its material out through the monthly bills?
If the commission so decrees, it's up to the commission. Under this order, the commission can allow anyone that it pleases to use the envelope. Well, all they need to do is file a complaint. And if the commission believes that the subject matter is proper or the viewpoint expressed is proper, then the commission will compel us to carry that message.
But not flyers or candidates for public office, could it?
No, it would discriminate against them. It did that, matter of fact, a year ago. Committee for $1 million, Proposition 36, Jarvis Gann Initiative, applied to the commission because they wanted to indicate to ratepayers that there was a measure on the ballot that would affect ratepayers. But the commission, and that is in the appendix to the jurisdictional statement, said that because it did not directly relate to a commission proceeding, that they shall be denied, and they were denied.
How about solar energy? I guess you wouldn't mind carrying that, would you?
We have carried commission notices concerning solar energy before, but we have not been compelled to carry the messages, for example, of a private corporation in the solar industry who wants to promote but his particular device as TURN is trying to promote.
That's the one I was talking about.
We have not been compelled to do that.
Suppose some group came in with the material, information, propaganda, whatever you want to call it, about tariffs, urging that tariffs be put on all imports from Japan. Would the commission have the authority to have that circulated?
Under this order, I suppose.
Under this order, of course it would, but I don't think that the commission would necessarily have the authority to compel us to carry that message as promulgated. I think it's important to remember that we do not take the position that the commission can never compel us to carry someone's message. We think that when the commission endeavors to do that, the commission still has to show an overriding governmental interest for making us carry the message that you indicate. And in the instant case, the commission, we don't think, has met its burden of proof of showing that there is a compelling state interest for carrying TURN's message. The commission already has California state law, which says specifically that intervener funding can be given to people who intervene in rape cases. For example, the commission has awarded more than $160,000 to TURN during the past year, pending now before the commission is an application for over $800,000 by some other consumer group. So the commission already has at its disposal a very clear mechanism for taking care of the problem that it wants to resolve. Thus, there is no reason for it to broadly stifle First Amendment rights. There is no reason for it to compel PG&E to become the courier of TURN's message. TURN can mail to the households in
Harris,
the PG&E.
Could you explain just, I'm not sure I understand. You say the commission has ordered the utility to pay TURN $160,000 or given it from public funds?
From public. What it does is it will order the utility to pay it, and then the utility recoups it in its next rate case that comes up.
I see. And is it in the nature of, like, paying for their attorney's fees for participating in the proceeding? I see.
All fees associated with the case. In Pruneyard, which, of course, is a case that they rely upon very heavily, there you had a shopping center that was open to the public to come and go as it pleased. Some 25,000 people congregated there daily. There was no requirement that government pick or choose the speakers. The only requirement was that the facility, in that case the shopping center, be made available. But here, in order for government to carry out its order, it must become ensnarled in picking and choosing speakers, precisely what this court said in Police Department of Chicago versus Mosley. Government should not be involved in picking and choosing speakers. When you have other ways to accomplish the governmental purpose, then government ought not to be allowed to then use means that will broadly stifle First Amendment activities. Here, unlike in Pruneyard, government did not permit Pruneyard, as Justice Rehnquist pointed out, to open those portions of the shopping center that had never been opened to the public. Here, PG&E is required to open its billing envelope that it has never opened to the public. The question is basically one: does it really make sense, in view of all these other alternatives, to compel PG&E to carry somebody else's message that can easily be disseminated in another manner?
Could say to PG&E, well, if you're going to use this extra space, you ought to pay for it.
We have no problems with paying for the extra space. We conceded that in the court below, that if that is the governmental interest involved, recouping the value of that extra space, which it said it was in its decision, then there is no reason why government cannot assess, let's say, for example, if it's worth $300,000 and properly charge that, assuming it's reasonable, to PG&E. PG&E would have no constitutional right, in my opinion.
And that charge couldn't be recouped from the consumer.
That is right. That is quite correct. We would have to be borne by the stockholders of PG&E. I will reserve the balance of my time.
Mr. Fogelman.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the Court. In order to put this case in its proper...
Could you raise your voice some, Mr. Fogelman?
Yes, Your Honor. In order to put this case in its proper perspective, it is important to step back a moment and look at what the Commission did and why it did it. PG&E is the largest investor-owned gas and electric public utility in the country. It has a lawful and practical monopoly on the delivery of gas and electric service within its service area, which includes most of the state of California. It recovers its reasonable costs and a reasonable rate of return in rates paid by the ratepayers. Its representation in commission rate cases is very effective. That representation, by some of the best expert witnesses, consultants, and lawyers that money can buy, is considered an operating expense to the utility and is paid for ultimately by the ratepayers. The public utility...
Well, to some extent by the stockholders, too, isn't it?
Not really, Your Honor, because...
Doesn't it reduce the revenue? Isn't there some reduction of...
It's an operating expense, and all of their operating expenses are recovered in rates, I believe.
Well, aren't the operating expenses shared by the ratepayers and the stockholders?
It's my understanding that 100% of operating expenses would be recovered. Of course, costs which are unreasonable or imprudent would be disallowed from the rate base and would be borne by the shareholders.
What is the limit? What are the limits on how this authority of the Commission can be used?
The Commission is limited by its state-authorized authority under the state Constitution, and it's limited by the United States Constitution. Insofar as it does not violate the principles of either of those authorities, it is essentially free to regulate public utilities in the public interest. With respect to ordering a public utility to carry the messages of a third party, it's difficult to pose the precise limits. There are probably many questions which the Commission ultimately will be required to decide in pursuing this program. But it hasn't reached those questions.
Who's going to define those limits?
Well, Your Honor, ultimately the Commission will do so.
Suppose someone comes in and says, in the next election there is going to be a recall of three state Supreme Court justices on the ballot. And we aren't taking any position as to whether they should be recalled or not recalled, but here we want this message put in that you should be sure to vote on this because that is an exercise of your right to control your public servants, including the courts. Commission, let that go in?
Well, under this program, they certainly wouldn't.
Well,
and that's the only program.
I didn't get that.
Under this program, they certainly would not.
Why not?
Because the purpose of this program, the primary purpose, the reason why the state has done what it's done here, is to permit consumer groups to solicit funds to increase their participation in commission proceedings involving PG&E. And insofar as the access furthers that primary purpose, access would be granted. Now, it is possible that the commission could enlarge the scope of the program. And
predicate for its act, though, was that for the order was that the space belongs to the consumer, and hence we will act as proxy for the consumer and send them out something that we think they might be interested in.
Well, Your Honor,
based on that, I wouldn't think the utility, as a who doesn't own the space, I wouldn't think the utility would have standing to object to whatever it was the.
Your Honor, there's no question in our mind that the determination of ratepayer property is an independent basis for the decision.
Yes.
It's res judicata here.
Well, I agree, however, all I'm saying.
However, we don't think it makes any difference.
Is it res judicata here?
It's res judicata here because it was decided in an earlier proceeding that the extra space in the billing envelope is ratepayer property. PG&E was a party to that proceeding, did not take it up to a higher court. And in this case, the Commission refused to allow that particular finding to be relitigated. The California Supreme Court essentially affirmed the finding of res judicata.
Well, it essentially denied review.
Well, a denial of review is a decision on the merits under California law of all questions of law and fact. Yes, Your Honor.
There are no guidelines, right?
Under this present program, there are a number of guidelines. Which can be inferred from the criteria under which...
Well, I don't consider guidelines that can be inferred. I consider guidelines as something you can point to.
All right. TURN was permitted in the billing envelope because of four characteristics enunciated in the Commission's decision. The first was an ability to represent a significant segment of the ratepayer population. The second was a present, current involvement in proceedings involving PG&E. The third was that it was a duly constituted nonprofit corporation, and the fourth was that it had a financial hardship if it were not permitted access in participating in PG&E proceedings.
That's it?
Those were the characteristics, yes.
Well,
those are the criteria for
Then could you compel them to carry an advertisement from the Sun people that you want to use that energy?
Your Honor, I think it would be fair to assume that since their participation and their intention to solicit funds specifically for the purpose of participation, and in fact there's an auditing procedure
here. Is there any other governmental agency in California that can control what a corporation may say?
Your Honor, there are a number of state agencies that can
like
do that.
Like what?
The State Banking Commission regulates banking. There are truth in lending type laws, truth in lending type disclosures. In fact, the state often requires speech to be carried. This court recently...
What other corporation is required to carry something that they don't want to carry?
There are many disclosure requirements. The SEC proxy statement.
This isn't disclosure. This is propaganda.
Well, Your Honor, what it is fund solicitation messages, which this court in the Schomburg case and the Cornelius case indicated was fully protected speech. It involves the provision of information and the advocacy of causes. And that's all that TURN is being...
Freedom in lending doesn't require you to send it to everybody. You only require to send it to your customer.
Well, that is the program here.
And so these are not Freedom of Lending customers. These are customers who can't help themselves.
Well, these are customers of the utility.
Who can't help themselves. My point is that you see no difference between a utility and an ordinary corporation.
Your Honor, I do. I think public utility is far more heavily regulated than many corporations.
That's why you won't use it here.
Well, I think the...
If it were not a utility, you wouldn't be interested, would you?
Well, the Commission does regulate public utilities.
Utility.
Yes.
Mr. Fogelman, a moment ago you made the statement that under California law, denial of review by the Supreme Court of California is an affirmance on fact and law. Is that true where the only proceeding below is an agency proceeding and it's never been to court?
Yes. The Consumer Lobby Against Monopolies case specifically holds that. I think it's page 901, 25 Cal 3rd.
You said that although the property matter was a independent ground for decision, you don't think it's necessary or important?
Well, I think it doesn't make a difference to this decision because I believe that the Public Utilities Commission, under its broad regulatory powers, has the authority on the objective facts of this case to enter the order that it did, even if the space inside the envelope were deemed utility property.
Yeah, well, let's assume there's no spare space in an envelope, and the PUC orders the utility to use a larger envelope and to let TURN put its material in it as long as TURN pays for it. Now, that would be the same case, wouldn't it?
I think that would be a legitimate situation. I think also if the ratepayers paid for the
second stamp, that would be a reasonable regulation. The company really would be a courier of somebody else's material.
That's right. Basically, the billing envelope is a unique medium of communication.
Yes, well, now, suppose that your answer to that question is just wrong, that they couldn't make the utility carry TURN's message on those facts. Would that mean that you have to lose this case?
No, because if the court were...
Then you'd have to get to the property thing.
Then you'd have to get to the property thing, and that is binding on this court as a res judicata determination.
Well, Mr. Harris, isn't your general regulatory rationale really foreclosed by the Consolidated Edison case?
No, it's not, Your Honor, for
a
couple of reasons.
It seems very similar.
Well, the big distinction there is that Consolidated Edison involved a restriction on the utility speech. It's very important, I think, for this Court to look at the purposes of the First Amendment which underlie the difference between affirmative speech and negative speech rights. Insofar as someone is attempting to speak and the state says you can't speak, you have a situation where the marketplace of ideas, society's interest in obtaining information in wide open debate, is limited. And that is the Consolidated Edison case.
Well, in some cases, the court has indicated at least that there is a concomitant right not to speak, has it not?
Yes, it has, Your Honor, but the underlying purposes which serve the right not to speak, the right to refrain from speaking and to refrain from associating with the views of another, is very different from the marketplace of ideas notion. It is, and this is not to be trivialized, it's an important purpose. It is the sanctity and integrity of an individual's belief and thought. It is the interest that was involved in Barnett.
And you take the position that that does not extend to a corporation?
I take the position that it does not extend to a corporation which is an artificial entity, and furthermore, that it certainly doesn't extend to a public utility, which is a very heavy regulated artificial entity. Furthermore, I don't believe it's coextensive with the affirmative counterpart, which serves an entirely different interest.
Does it strike you that the Commission's theory about broader participation or expression of a variety of views is basically a content-based determination? The Commission has to look at what it is TURN is doing and wants to say as the basis for its order that it be allowed to use the envelope.
The order, in a broad sense, is content neutral because the Commission has disavowed any intention of looking at the way that TURN solicits funds. However,
yes,
there's a limited purpose.
It certainly has to look at the nature of what TURN is doing and saying in order to decide that it's going to order that its message be carried.
Well, to the extent that turned speech might hypothetically, and again, this has never occurred, and I might say in a similar experience to UCAN's situation, no problems really developed over a two-year period. But assuming that turn were to exceed the purposes of the program and to make engage in some sort of use of the extra space, which was not a solicitation of funds, in that situation, the commission would have to look at that. I'm not sure precisely what they would do.
At least it says we prefer to have Turn's material in this extra space than the companies.
What it says, Your Honor.
Well, isn't it? Isn't that right? It prefers Turn's to the company's material.
No, the company gets in the billing envelope every month of the year, and it gets in the extra space at least 8 months of the year and possibly all 12.
It may be so, but when it can't get into the envelope, you can't use the extra space, the commission has said we prefer Turn's material to go in the extra space.
Well, there is
never. 4 times a year it makes that preference.
4 times a year, Turn has priority. That is correct. However,
well, that's based on content.
Well, in a sense, I don't see though how the company.
I don't know what else
we're
is.
Concerned here with a violation of the a supposed violation of the company's First Amendment rights.
Did I understand you to answer Justice O'Connor that a corporation has no First Amendment right to refuse to carry the message of somebody else if ordered by a public utility commission such as
Your Honor? I certainly don't think that the corporation has a right to refrain from speaking, which is implicated in this case. I would think that you could possibly postulate a situation in which some area of corporate autonomy would be so threatened by a state compulsion to speak that there would be a violation of the principle.
Of what principle? First Amendment?
Of the right to refrain from speaking under the First Amendment.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I don't think...
What about an incorporated church?
Well, that would raise other First Amendment questions.
How about the John Birch Society?
The compulsion of the John Birch Society to speak would...
It's a corporation.
It is a corporation. And I guess my answer would have to be that you can postulate situations in which a corporation, which conceitedly has some degree of private autonomy, would have that autonomy violated by a compulsion to carry.
Such as the NAACP, for example.
You could probably postulate a set of facts involving the NAACP.
So you didn't really mean to say that in no case does a corporation have a right under the First Amendment to refuse to carry somebody else's
message. I think what I meant, Your Honor, is that in this case, there is no violation of any right to
refuse. Let me narrow that down with a narrower question, Justice Brennan's. Take a regulated activity, the three major commercial networks. Could the Federal Communications Commission come down with an order and have it constitutionally enforced, providing that no prime minister of any other country or any chief of state of any other country could be on a television program unless it was approved by the State Department?
That's quite a difficult hypothetical. That's certainly not this case.
They're both regulated industries.
I'm not sure, Your Honor, but it is a heavily regulated medium of communication, that is, the airwaves.
A broadcast station, not necessarily a network, broadcasting station is more regulated than the electric utility in the sense that the Federal Communications Commission can terminate their license and put them off the air every 3 years, I think it is.
That's true. On the other
hand,
that's
pretty heavy regulation, isn't it?
That's heavy regulation. Of course, the state here has granted a monopoly to a public utility, and it is only at the pleasure of the state that the utility has that monopoly, and it is to protect the public that the state regulates the public utility in the public interest.
Is an example of the sort of corporate First Amendment right that would be sustained the Tornillo case, where certainly the Miami Press was a corporation, and its First Amendment right to publish obviously allowed it to not to have to carry the messages of others?
Well, the Tornillo case, in our view, does not turn on the fact that the Miami Herald was a corporation.
No, the press freedom extends to private individuals or corporations alike. And I take it what you're saying is that since the PG&E is not in the business of running a newspaper, it isn't governed by that case.
Well, no, that's not what we're saying. In some sense, a pamphlet, a document like Progress would be equivalent to a newspaper. But PG&E's position is that the billing envelope, the medium of delivery of its newspaper, is somehow subject to inviolable editorial discretion.
Well,
and that's not the case.
Would Tornillo have come out any differently if the Florida statute had said, along with the newspaper, you have to put in the little envelope that you deliver the newspaper and a retraction? It doesn't have to be in the paper itself.
I think it might well have come out differently, particularly if the supplement were clearly identified as being the views of the speaker, and furthermore, if there were no cost to the newspaper. One of the critical features of Tornillo on which that case turned was the fact that there was a penalty on the affirmative speech of the newspaper. Because the newspaper spoke about certain subjects, the right of reply statute was triggered and space had to be given. That is not involved here because TURN gets access to the billing envelope under this program no matter what PG&E says. So there is no chilling effect which would tend to cause the newspaper not to address a specific point of view.
Mr. Fogelman, a little while ago you said there was absolutely no content regulation here, if I understood you correctly. But is it not true that there is a requirement that there be a disclaimer enclosed in it? And isn't that part of the content of what you mail?
Yes, Your Honor. That would be comparable, probably, to the disclosure requirements that this
But that is content regulation.
It is content regulation, but it's designed to protect PG&E's First Amendment rights. Actually, Your Honor.
Mr. Fogelman.
Yes, Your Honor.
Have you answered his question?
Yes, Your Honor.
I was under the impression that the commission order was limited to neutral messages. Did it use the word neutral?
The statement was that in a broad sense, you might consider this regulation to be content neutral because...
But did the commission use that word, term, contract, content?
No, it did not use that word.
That's your word?
That's my word.
Well, the purposes of TURN are not entirely consistent with those of the public utility, I understand. What are its bylaws, what are its constitution and bylaws stated purposes to be?
The purpose of TURN, I believe TURN's bylaws state that its purpose is to provide representation to the interests of residential ratepayers in
right.
Public Utility Commission proceedings.
To oppose rate increases.
To oppose rate increases.
Let's assume, for example, you've had a good many hypotheticals posed to you this afternoon, but suppose the entity that came along and asked for permission for space opposed private ownership of utilities. Would that be a neutral A message?
Your Honor, any message is not a neutral message. That takes a position, that's flatly
contrary to the private utility.
Right,
point
right.
Of view.
It's an advocacy message.
Right.
But the point is that in letting a participant in commission proceedings into the billing envelope to solicit funds to improve its participation, the commission is letting that entity, whoever it may be, as long as it satisfies certain criteria, speak and advocate its own position as best it can in order to try and raise money so it
so
can participate
contract,
better.
To content help. Neutral is not a requirement.
No, it's. I don't think precise content neutrality in the sense that you're using the term would be required to sustain this regulation.
As some justice asked you, is there any limiting principle? Assume, for example, that... The cause organization that wanted space urged the customers of PG&E to vote for people running for the legislature who would support public ownership of all utilities. Would that be neutral?
Well, to the extent, would it be neutral?
Obviously.
No, it's not a neutral message. It's
yes,
an advocacy position, but permitting
would
cause...
Would it be lawful?
I would believe that the commission would have the power, if it faced the question,
to
permit cause into the billing envelope, because the commission is doing this to provide the consumers with a diversity of viewpoints, not merely only the views of PG&E. It's also doing it to increase the ability of different viewpoints to participate in commission proceedings.
Why would that be contrary to Miami Herald?
It's contrary to Miami Herald for several reasons. First,
Why wouldn't it be contrary to Miami Herald if the commission permitted the sort of insert that I described, advocating public ownership of utilities, absolutely contrary to the basic perception of private utilities. Miami Herald did not want to be a forum for the views of a contrary to its own.
Well, I think that, first of all, that case is, of course, not involved here. But
you think it's not
involved? I think it would not be the reason why Miami Herald came out the way it did is basically two reasons. The first was that there was a penalty on what the newspaper said, and that's not involved in this case. The second reason is that there was an intrusion on editorial discretion. But I don't think the cases of this court hold that you can never, never compel a newspaper to carry the speech of a third party. In fact, there's a Lorraine Journal case of this court.
Did we not sustain the right of Columbia Broadcasting System to reject certain paid ads because they said it wasn't necessary to get the information out? Democratic Committee against
yes, you did.
Columbia Broadcasting.
But you also, in the CBS versus FCC case, permitted candidates for public office to have a limited right of access to get their pupils.
That was under
because,
the fairness doctrine.
Right, right. And in a sense, what the Commission has done here, the previous discussion of Red Lion, is to do something similar to a fairness doctrine. It's attempted to provide fair access.
You're going a lot further than you have to win your case here when you start saying that, yes, the Commission, of course, could have stuff advocating the public ownership of utilities. I thought the Commission allowed TURN to come in because TURN is concerned with Commission rate-making proceedings. And I take it there's no proceeding presently before the Commission about whether PG&E should be publicly owned. So you really don't have to get to that, do you?
Now, you're absolutely right, Your Honor. That's
true. But the principles are the same, of course.
The principles are the same.
That's the word neutral. Do you know anything today in the public view that's neutral?
Well, I suppose any position you take is likely to have some repercussion, so.
Well, would your commission consider the use of an ad urging the abolishment of your commission?
I think the Commission, Your Honor, is concerned with this program. There are many hypotheticals that can be raised.
Yes,
but the point is the Commission has taken a very limited step here. And basically, PG&E, it's taken a step to try
and... Why is the state taking this step?
It's taken this step to try to improve consumer participation in its own proceedings so it can get a fuller record and make wiser decisions, which is its obligation.
That the tornado was different because there was a cost on the newspaper. It would chill its own speech if it had to print replies.
That's right.
Is it perfectly clear that if the utility here had never initiated a program of using this space for its own propaganda, that this order would have ever come about?
I think it's fair to say that the Commission only recently discovered of the existence of the extra space, this income-generating asset. And I think at that point it had a problem. What do you do with it that utilizes it in the public interest?
Putting my question just in a little different form, you think the case would be precisely the same in terms of its constitutional issues if the utility had never made use of it, of the space for a similar purpose?
I think it would be quite similar, yes.
Well, could the Commission order that any unused offices in PG&E buildings be turned over to TURN for its office space and that sort of thing?
Well, the Commission has an obligation to see that the utility operates in an efficient manner. And to the extent that unused offices are not being used, the Commission can make PG&E rent them out, presumably. But that's not this case. If I may address some critical points here, I think there are five critical aspects of this decision that preclude the notion that there's a violation of the First Amendment. First, there is no limitation on the continuing availability of progress in the envelope. PG&E can still say whatever it wants, as much as it wants, in the billing envelope. It only is possibly losing a subsidy of its speech to which it is not constitutionally entitled. Second, each speaker is to determine its own content. And TURN's solicitation messages will not be looked at insofar as they're consistent with the purposes of the program. Third, TURN's required to identify itself as the source of the message and to indicate that neither PG&E nor the Commission have reviewed the message. This is effectively means that there will be no confusion, and this Court can be sure that if there is confusion, the Commission will immediately take steps to rectify it.
And to that extent, Tern is not free to say just what it wants to say. So 2 and 3 are somewhat contradictory.
I beg your pardon.
And say, and to that extent, Tern is not absolutely free to use the space exactly.
You're right. The disclosure requirement.
Are inconsistent with one another.
That's right. We're making Tern carry that speech. Fourth, there is no cost to PG&E for the inclusion of Tern's message, not 1 cent. So the utility is really not being disabled in any sense or being required to pay any penalty.
It's material that it now can't, that under this order it can't send out. If it's going to have to do that, it'll have to pay for it.
It'll have to pay for it, but it's still in the same billing envelope. The only thing is it may be moved from the subsidized space to the unsubsidized space.
Oh, no, but it would cost them money.
And finally, and this really ties the program, the grant of access to the ultimate purpose, the money which Tern receives from its solicitation message must be used for participation in Commission proceedings involving PG&E. Basically, I think an expansive reading of the three cases, the Barnett, Woolley, and Tornillo cases, is being asserted before this Court. The Court is being asked to expand negative speech rights to a set of facts that they have never reached in the past. And I think it's fair to say that the Commission's decision is reasonable regulation. It's been done in other states. California is not alone in this. It's an experimental program, but I submit to the Court that there is no infringement of any First Amendment rights here. And if there is an infringement, it's so minimal, the intrusion is so minimal, and the state interests are sufficiently significant to warrant that intrusion.
Have the other states that have done this taken the action that the California Commission did in declaring the unused or extra space to be ratepayers' property?
No, Your Honor, they have not.
General regulatory power?
Yes, they have.
Governor Dean, further, Mr. Harris?
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, just a few notes. In regards to the ownership of the extra space, we would disagree, as we did in our reply brief to their motions to dismiss, that that is foreclosed. And we quoted from the California Supreme Court itself in 25 Cal App 3rd, 891, where the Court explained that, quote, when the issue is a question of law rather than of fact, the prior determination of the, and I'm adding in the word commission, is not conclusive either if injustice would result or if the public interest requires that litigation not be foreclosed. As we indicated earlier, if the California Supreme Court or any other California court decided that this was critical in any other proceeding, it could be relitigated. Responding to,
but here to second guess the state court on what's a property interest.
No. I just wanted to clear up the record in terms of whether or not this is forever foreclosed. We certainly don't believe it is. First of all, we believe it's contrary to what this court said in New York Public Service Commission versus Public Board, that when ratepayers pay for service, they do not pay for the property used to deliver that service.
Judge the case on the basis that the property. That unused space is the property of the consumer. That's the way the case gets here, isn't it?
No.
Why?
No.
We can't second-guess the state court on that.
No. We brought the issue here, Your Honor, on the basis that it infringed upon our First Amendment rights.
Even if the property does belong to the...
Even if that ephemeral concept of extra space, which may be there 1 month, may not be there the next month. It is the putting of that message in the bill and envelope, which belongs to PG&E. That issue.
PG&E just put their bills on heavier paper and solve this problem?
The Commission cautioned us not to do that, Your Honor, and we would try to be fair. But on the other hand, it is quite possible for Tern to use heavy paper for its message and preclude us from putting progress. I think what this case really points out is what this Court said in Corn versus California, that it is the purpose of the First Amendment to remove government from picking and choosing and from deciding who should speak, when they should speak, etc. And I think it's even more important here, because here the state of California has at its disposal many other ways to resolve this problem, and it never has to become involved in picking this group, picking that group. If the problem that's bothering California is that there is some extra space there where, as it said, it's not recouping the economic value of that space, then let it do what it always does in a rate-making proceeding, assess a value. So I think that this case clearly comes down in terms of saying that here's a case where government really has gotten itself involved in a situation that it will be impossible to retrieve itself from, picking and choosing speakers. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted.
The Honorable Court is now adjourned until tomorrow at 10 o'clock.